what was going on, but rather felt that they should have done. Dee was talking to a black-clad, heavily built young man who looked vaguely familiar to Vimes. Vimes must have looked familiar to him as well, because he gave him a nod just short of offensiveness.
"Ah, your grace, Vimes," he said. "Did you enjoy the opera?"
"Especially the bit about the gold," said Vimes. "And you are—"
The man clicked his heels.
"Wolf von Überwald."
Something went bing in Vimes's head, and his eyes picked up details. The slight lengthening of the incisors, the way the blonde hair was so thick around the collar.
"Angua's brother," he said.
"Yes, Your Grace."
"Wolf the Wolf, eh?"
"Thank you, Your Grace," said Wolf solemnly. "That is very funny. Indeed, yes. It is quite some time since I heard that one. Your Ankh Morpork sense of humour."
"But you're wearing silver on your uniform. Those insignias, wolf heads biting the lightning."
Wolf shrugged.
"Ah, the kind of thing a policeman would notice. But they are nickel."
"I don't recognise the regiment."
"We are more of a movement," said Wolf.
The stance was Angua's too. It was the poised fight-or-flight look, as if the whole body was a spring, eager to unwind, and flight wasn't an option. People in the presence of Angua when she was in a bad mood tended to turn up their collars without quite knowing why. But the eyes were different. They weren't like Angua's. They weren't even like the eyes of a wolf. No animal had eyes like that, but Vimes saw them occasionally in some of Ankh-Morpork's less salubrious drinking establishments, where, if you were lucky, you'd get out of the door before the drink turned you blind. Colon called that sort of person a bottle covey. Nobby preferred soddy nutter. But whatever the name, Vimes recognised a head-butting, eye-gouging, down-and-dirty bastard when he saw one. In a fight, you'd have no alternative but to lay him out or cut him down, because otherwise he'd do his very best to kill you. Most bar fighters wouldn't usually go that far, because killing a copper was known to be bad news for the murderer and anyone else who knew him. But your true nutter wouldn't worry about that, because while he was fighting, his brain was somewhere else. Wolf smiled.
"There is a problem, Your Grace."
"What? No, just thinking. I feel I've met you before. You called on my father this morning."
"Ah, yes. We don't always change for visitors, Your Grace," said Wolf.
There was an orange light in his eyes now. Until then, Vimes had thought that glowing eyes was just a figure of speech.
"If you'll excuse me, I do need to talk to the ideas taster for a moment," said Vimes. "Politics."
Dee followed him into a quiet spot.
"Yes. Did Dozy go to the Scone Cave at the same time every day?"
"I believe so. It depended on his other duties."
"So he didn't go in at the same time every day. Right.
When does the guard change?"
"At 3 o'clock.
"Did he go in before the guards change or afterwards?"
"That would depend on..."
"Oh, dear. Don't the guards write anything down?"
Dee stared at Vimes.
"Are you saying he could have gone in twice in one day?"
"Very good. But I'm saying someone might have. A dwarf comes up in a boat alone, carrying a couple of candles. Would the guards take that much interest? And if another dwarf carrying a couple of candles came up an hour or so later, when the new guards were there, well, is there any real risk? Even if our faker was noticed, he'd just have to mutter something about, oh, bad candles or something, damp wicks, anything."
Dee looked distant.
"It's still a great risk," he said at last. "If our thief was keeping an eye on the guard changes and knew where the real Dozy was, it'd be worth it, wouldn't it? For the scone."
Dee shuddered and then nodded.
"In the morning the guards will be closely questioned," he said.
"By me."
"Why?"
"Because I know what kind of questions get answers. We'll set up an office here. We'll find out the movements of everyone and talk to all the guards, okay? Even the ones on the gates. We'll find out who went in and out."
"You already think you know something. Let's just say some ideas are forming, shall we?"
"I will see to matters."
Vimes straightened up and walked back to Lady Sybil, who stood like an island in a sea of dwarfs. She was talking animatedly to several of them who Vimes vaguely recognised as performers in the opera.
"What have you been up to, Sam?" she said.
"Politics, I'm afraid," said Vimes.
"And trusting my instincts. Can you tell me who's watching us?"
"Oh, it's that game, is it?" said Sybil. She smiled happily, and in the tones of someone chatting about inconsequential things, said,